Now on BBC One, we come to part 14 of our adventure, The Trial of Tachyon TV. Having defeated Podshock, Neil and John have concluded their presentation for the defence. With Tachyon TV's future at stake, the Valyard, who has been exposed as John's evil twin brother from Nottingham, has charged them with being criminally unfunny, a charge known as career genocide. Now that Damon is isolated in the world of Scotland and Rula Lenska's recording career is caught in a time bubble, Neil and John must use all their skills to overcome the powers that be.
In an exciting adventure with Tachyon TV this week,
Ian Briggs. Nicholas Briggs.
Keith Balfour came down to Southampton to see a Doctor Who convention that was run by a servant of the devil called Bill Baggs.
Rula Lenska.
Rula needs your help.
And some very special guests.
Hello.
Make sure you have your tissues handy.
Hello? Just speak up a bit, I'm in a nightclub.
Plus, our comprehensive guide to Gallifrey 21.
And some very brave singing indeed.
In the very last Tachyon TV to be released under the current production team.
Now in anamorphic widescreen. Tony Blair regrets the use of Claire Bloom in David Tennant's finale.
In the end, it was divisive, and I'm sorry about that.
David Cameron reacts to the news that the chairman of the 1922 committee claimed £80 in expenses for a Big Finish subscription because they helped with his commute to the House of Commons.
I am angry about what has happened. It is out of order. Some of this is an abuse of taxpayers' money, and I'm going to deal with it.
President Obama is angered by the news that Torchwood is coming to America.
So let me be clear. Those ideas have been tested, and they have failed.
Lord Goldsmith decides that he doesn't like the End of Time Part 2 after all.
I now recognise, as I actually suspected at the outset, but I now recognise that it wasn't good enough.
Gordon Brown responds to rumours that the Mind of Evil has been recolorised.
I think you mustn't believe everything you read in the newspapers.
No, I don't.
This is quite
ridiculous. So it's not true?
Yeah, it's quite ridiculous.
And finally, Conan O'Brien is offered the chance to be the new host of Tachyon TV.
I would take that job.
Welcome to a new Tachyon TV. Hello, John. How are you?
Well, I'm still reeling a little bit, actually. There's been so many protests about the interview we did with Nick Briggs in the last podcast.
Yeah, there's been an uproar from some quarters. You've got some messages there, haven't you?
Yes, I've got a message here from the Guerrier brothers. I think they're an act on The X Factor. I'm not too sure. They're outraged. Mark Wright, I don't know if there's any relation to Steve Wright. He's saying that he's actually unsubscribed from the Tachyon TV feed in iTunes.
Devastating news, but we have made it up to Nick Briggs, and the result is a brand new interview you did with him, isn't that right, John?
That's right. Nick was good enough to actually do one from the top, and by way of apology, that's all we could do, really. Well, welcome to another interview on the Tachyon TV podcast. And the person that I'm interviewing needs no introduction at all. It's Nick Briggs. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
Nick, you're obviously very famous in the world of Doctor Who. And I'd like to talk to you about the thing that probably most people know you for, which is working as the interviewer on the Mythmaker series of videos.
Well, mainly it was because I was cheap, or rather free, because Keith Barnfather, who started producing the Mythmakers, had an interviewer. He used to work for Channel 4, I don't know, putting tapes in machines or something. And there was one of the Channel 4 original announcers called, I always want to say Keith Harris, but he's the one with Orville, isn't he? No. But
So there was Paul Coyer as well, was one of the old ones, wasn't he?
That's right. And I know Keith knew him as well. But he got, I think it's Keith Harrison, to do these Mythmakers interviews because he thought this guy's a proper TV presenter. And of course, he did a good job, but he knew nothing about Doctor Who. So he made, appalling errors. Like when he spoke to John Leeson, and John Leeson told him all about how he did the voice of K-9 behind a flat on the set. And then he interviewed Michael Wisher. Michael Wisher said the same thing about doing the Dalek voices. And he said, oh, so it would literally be you and John Leeson together, which is a perfectly reasonable conclusion, isn't it? Perfectly logical. But of course, as Doctor Who fans, you watch that and you just think, go, you idiot. K-9 and the Daleks have never appeared together. I'm not watching this anymore.
So he was sacked, surely, straight away.
Yeah, and plus the fact I think he was demanding professional rates. And Keith Barnfather came down to Southampton. You never expected such a long answer, did you? Keith Barnfather came down to Southampton to see a Doctor Who convention that was run by a servant of the devil called Bill Baggs. And and I was sort of, I featured heavily at that convention, interviewing people and doing sort of silly things, skits and what have you. I did a skit on the militant Graham Williams tendency. I was sort of demanding jokes being brought back into Doctor Who and stuff like that. And Keith just saw this guy up there, mouthing off, thought he's a Doctor Who fan and he's, pretty good in front of an audience. I reckon I could get him to interview people for free. Which was true for a little while. So I jumped at the chance of doing the interviews. It was, however, extremely intimidating to meet people from Doctor Who and kind of strangely disappointing.
There are some of those interviews, I think, with people that maybe those people haven't been interviewed since, not just because they've died, but just because they don't want to be involved. Were you involved in the Jackie Lane one?
Yes. And it was quite clear from that interview that she didn't actually want to be involved at that stage either. Yeah, I mean, it was, you must know as a Doctor Who fan, it's actually what would be really good would be to meet, Doctor Who, to meet the Doctor and to meet, the real fictional characters. That would be, that's the thrilling thing. That would be fantastic, wouldn't it? And the trouble is you meet an actor and, I'm an actor and I'm fairly unremarkable. And it's that you just meet these sort of just normal people who will be disappointing to you in some way. I mean, I had since become really good friends with Nick Courtney, but when I first met him, I mean, he was, not very nice to me, frankly, but he was just nervous and shy. But I, there I was with the Brigadier and he was being an arse to me. I've since spoken to Nick about it, but he was, and we've laughed about it, bless him, but I was nervous. And you impose your own lack of confidence and nerves on whatever it is you're getting from the other person. So, if you're feeling bad about yourself or worried that you're not up to the task, then anything that the other person does that feels remotely negative makes you feel like they're horrible and you're rubbish,
Well, do you think it was partly to do also with the fact that, I suppose, in fandom being in its infancy and people going out to the conventions before they'd got used to the kind of grammar almost of how to react in these situations? It was quite early days, I guess.
Do you know, I think that's absolutely right. Yes, they hadn't learned. I mean, Wendy Padbury, for example, when I interviewed her, and she's a delightful person, she's really lovely. And as they were setting up the camera and everything, she said, she just dragged me to one side. She said, you've got to tell me what to say. And I said, what do you mean? She said, I don't know anything about Doctor Who. And in those days, some of the directors would write a script and put in brackets what the suggested answers were. And so I took her through this thing and was saying, the Seeds of Death, what's that? That's Ice Warriors. What were they? They were big green. Oh, right, I remember that. And there was lots of foam. Yeah. So I had to tell her all the answers beforehand. And I've since confirmed with Wendy on two separate occasions that the answers she now gives for every interview are, in fact, the ones I gave her.
So it all started there.
Yeah, she had to learn how to answer Doctor Who questions.
So you're actually teaching Wendy Padbury how to be Wendy Padbury.
Exactly, yes. Before, I don't know what she was before that. Probably some kind of amoeba.
There'll be more from Nick later.
Coming soon from Tachyon TV. and the Northampton Repertory Theatre Company, Torchwood the Musical.
Love me or hate me, make your choice, make it quickly. Owen's dead.
He's dead, he's dead, he's dead, he's dead, he's dead.
Now, you can see them in colour on the big stage, closer than ever before. So close, you can feel their fire.
Children everywhere. They're saying lots of weird stuff out of the thin air.
We are coming.
Starts out as a lark. Across the world, the kids are stopping in the park.
We are here.
And here we go again. We know the score, we know the end.
We know what this means. They took some kids before and now they're back to get some more. We know what that means. 4, 5, 6. Take our kids and leave us.
Just take 10%.
Like we promise, no regrets. 4, 5, 6.
It's a big decision.
You know what to do.
Send the kids who fail at school.
4, 5, 6.
Torchwood, the musical.
Silly, silly, silly. It's so silly. In the Torchwood Hub. Silly, silly, silly. Take a pilly. I've forgotten the words.
From the same people who brought you Fury from the Deep on Ice.
You are an alien sex gas hanging round in Cardiff, having sex in clubs, coming, having fun.
Can't believe it's still day one.
Featuring unforgettable performances of The Day Before You Came, So Hard You Didn't Know Where You Were, The Weevil Takes It All, and Gimme Gimme Gimme, A Stopwatch After Midnight.
There was poison in the air that night. The odds were shite for Yanto. We were dying there, yes, you and me. No more coffee for Yanto. Though he never thought that he could lose, there's no regret. If he had to do the same again, he would, my friend, O Yanto.
Book early to avoid disappointment.
Because the box office closes after lunch.
Mana mana. Mana mana. Mana mana.
Okay, John, well, the exciting news is that in a couple of weeks' time, we're off to Los Angeles for Gallifrey 21.
Yes, that's right. We're Tachyon TV will be there in full force. We'll have the glamorous Rula Lenska will be there with us. The slightly less glamorous me will be there as well.
And the even less glamorous me. What are you excited about? Any of the guests going that you're excited about seeing?
There are guests.
Apparently, they have these things called panels.
Well, obviously, the big one is John Levine. We're basing our whole kind of, it's almost like a caper movie, our whole visit there, is how on earth we can get an interview. It's like that film, wasn't it, ABBA the Movie, where that guy is just spending the whole time trying to get to interview ABBA. For us, we're going to be trying to get to interview Levine. We'll lure him to our room by strategic use of ruler. I think that will be the way we'll do it. We'll get Ruler to try, because she's very glamorous and she's also very famous.
Of course, it's not just the guests that people go to Gallifrey for. It's the incredible variety of panels that they have available. And we've been looking at the convention schedule, and there's a few that we're definitely going to go and see.
Yeah, I'm very excited about the panel Stories I've Wanked Over recently.
You're on that panel, aren't you? Aren't you talking about the Web Planet?
That's right. I mean, I'm quite, you know, the Web Planet there, there's that bit where their hands get stuck together with that wallpaper paste stuff. So it's an obvious candidate for discussion. I find the Optera very erotic.
There's another good panel on at the same time, unfortunately. I'm going to have to go to this one. It's called Slash Fiction. Go away and stop giving fandom a bad name. I'm looking forward to that one. There's tomatoes that you can pick up on your way in.
That's right. Yes, there's another panel that looks very interesting, which is on the Saturday, I think, the Saturday morning. It's Come Out of the Cosplay Closet, and that's hosted by Rob Shearman. It was going to be done by Ed Stradling, but Ed can't make the convention now. He was going to do it dressed as a Wirren. Rob is obviously going to be a firm massy.
Of course, probably the most eagerly anticipated of all the panels is how to make a successful three-hour podcast with an exciting new media model, and that's sponsored by Podshock.
Unfortunately, I'm actually watching television in my hotel room when that particular panel's on. One panel that I'm definitely on is the Nobody Knows Who I Am But I Have an Opinion Anyway panel. That's for people like me who think they've got something to say about Doctor Who but aren't actually famous in any way, aren't really connected with the show, or indeed aren't really connected with any of the hangers-on of the show. We're just like sub-hangers-on panel. And, you know, I'm going to come up with lots of important things. Like last year when I said that Children of Earth, Torch for Children of Earth, would be a terrible failure. You know, it's that kind of thing. I'm hoping to be making similarly incorrect predictions at the Nobody Knows Who I Am But I Have an Opinion Anyway panel.
I'm looking forward to an hour and 10 minutes of Ian Levine.
That's a slightly enigmatic title. What's going to be involved?
I think there's a buffet to start. That's an hour. And then there's 10 minutes of chat with Ian Levine. But he does cover a lot in 10 minutes because he talks very quickly. There's a good panel there called Yanto's Dead, Get Over It.
Yes, that's going to be very popular.
So you want to be in the Doctor Who Mafia? I think we should go to that one.
Yes, well, you know, God knows we've been trying hard enough for quite a while, but yeah, it'd be good to get some top tips from some of the members of the Mafia. Unfortunately, after they've told you in the panel, they then have to kill you. I'm really looking forward to the interestingly titled panel, Chicks Dig Time Lords, But They Dig Money and Sexual Technique a Whole Lot More.
Of course, during the whole weekend, Rob Shearman will be available, giving podcast interviews to anybody who'll have him. And when he's not doing that, he'll be reading from the LA telephone directory in the main hall.
And he will be wearing a maroon shirt when he's doing that.
Yeah, he's easy to spot.
That's the tip of the iceberg for the amount of panels that there are.
That's right, there's about 412 panels, all running simultaneously.
That's right, using several hotels scattered around the LA area. And in fact, there are going to be some alfresco ones. There's one in the old triple X rated pawn shop just down the way. That's some of the more advanced cosplay is going to be going on there.
And don't forget, there's 27 minutes with Gary Russell in a Denny's. Sadly, someone who won't be at Galley this year is Ian Briggs.
No, but Nicholas is. Speaking of which, here's the second part of our interview with him. I asked him about Daleks, and this is what he said! Eventually, of course, you ended up doing the voices on the series itself when the new series came back. But what was that like, the leap from performing in these, as you say, kind of Wing and a Prayer type productions, to going over to the big league?
Well, as you say, the key to this is that there was a lot of intervening time. And in that time, I'd got involved with doing Big Finish and doing the Dalek voices for Big Finish. And, you know, the thing you discover, really, it's a bit like the difference between amateur and professional theatre. Just to go off on a tangent for a moment, you know, I did some theatre down in the West Country for years, a sort of a rep season down in Sidmouth. And down in the West Country, they have a massive amount of amateur theatre that goes on, which they devote all their spare time to. So frankly, even though maybe the acting wasn't very good in the amateur productions, their sets and everything looked amazing because they took so much time over it. So, you know, doing all the stuff with Bill Baggs, doing the audio plays with him and the videos with him, you know, there's not a huge amount of difference between all that and what happens in television, because television money's always tight. You know, no matter how much money they tell you they spend on Doctor Who, they still have to work like hell really, really quickly. I mean, obviously there was some difference between working on a Bill Baggs video and working on Doctor Who, the flagship programme of the BBC, but not as much as you'd think, really. It's still all quite desperate and quick, fast, get on with it, you know. As a fan, of course, it was the most amazing thing. when I got the job. I mean, I've told this story ad infinitum. It's like my equivalent of the eye patch story that Nick Courtney has always told. There was a sort of brand meeting where Russell T. Davis met all the people, you know, to do with the magazine and the books and what have you, to explain, you know, Doctor Who's coming back. This is what we're going to do. This is how exciting it's going to be. Da-di-da-di-da. And at one point, they, apparently Russell said, and we're going to do the Daleks. They'll be back. And some bright spark called Clayton Hickman said, oh, if you're doing the Daleks, are you going to get Nick Briggs to do the voice? And Russell, who was a Big Finish subscriber at the time, said, yes, but don't tell him because we haven't asked his agent yet. At which point, you know, several days later, goodness knows how many people who were at that meeting all secretly phoned me and said, look, don't say anything, but this is what Russell T. Davis said. So I was left in this kind of excruciating position where I'd been told by several people that I was going to be the voice of the Daleks in the new TV series. And of course, as I've learned since with the BBC, they don't contact you until about a millisecond before they need you on set, you know. And then they can't understand why you haven't been sitting around doing nothing, waiting for them to call. And so, you know, I was waiting and waiting and waiting, and finally I got the call. And you know, I think about the second person I texted was David Tennant, ironically. I said, I am the Daleks.
It must have been quite a weird time, I think, because even though people probably thought things were going to be okay because it was Russell involved and people were aware of him, well, so many things must have depended on it. Big Finish's future, the future of Doctor Who magazine. It could have all been very different if it had been anybody other than Russell.
That's true. I think people don't realise how lucky they are that it's someone who's A, so talented, and B, such a massive Doctor Who fan. It's so easy. You know, we take things for granted so quickly when everything falls into place. You know, and I must say, working on the show in that first series, it's difficult now to think back and remember that we had no idea how popular it was going to be. People kept asking me, is it any good? Is it any good? And I kept saying, well, I think it's brilliant. I said, it's amazing what I've seen. But who can tell whether people will like it or not? You know, the thing I kept saying was, you know, what if a member of the royal family died the week that Doctor Who started? Because that's just the kind of thing that knocks a series, you know, history is peppered with examples, none of which I can think of, obviously, of things that should have been really popular, but for some random pointless reason were ignored or overlooked, you know.
It's interesting when you look back at Series 1, though. I watched some of it for the first time for a long while, really. And it's quite hard to put your finger on it, but I think it might be it is something very different about Series 1 compared to subsequent series. And I think it's because people were making a series and they just didn't quite know what was going to work and what wouldn't. And when it was successful, the following subsequent series seemed to focus on the bits that were, you know, characterised it. But in the first series, people were just really finding their way. And it really feels like that as well, in a good way.
Yeah, I think it's in a good way too. It's a little bit like the first Tom Baker series. You know, Tom Baker's this massive icon of Doctor Who now, and everyone says, oh, he was the best Doctor and what have you. And of course, when I love that idea that when he was making his first series, he had no idea that he was a legend. You know, he just thought he was some bloke who got some strange job. And so he was trying really hard and was also slightly clueless and made all sorts of decisions randomly and sort of just grinned a lot and just behaved strangely. And of course, it was brilliant. And then suddenly, with the self-knowledge of it, it never quite felt the same again for me. I mean, still great, but you know what I mean? Yeah. And there's that element to Doctor Who. They didn't know they were doing a brilliant thing. They hoped they were, and they were trying their best. But as you say, yeah, they did all sorts of things that they would then learn not to do in later stories. But I do love that first series. I particularly love The End of the World, the second episode.
Yeah.
I just, that kind of, for me, I just thought, oh my God, loads of aliens. It's like proper Doctor Who and everything. Because I'd seen an early cut of Rose, because to do the Nestine voice, it's hilarious to think in those days they were very free with their preview copies, and I couldn't believe it. I got this VHS of the early dub of Rose. I nearly died of excitement just holding the tape in my hands, I remember.
And the amount on eBay you got for that must have been great.
Do you know, that's a good point, isn't it? I mean, because it had stock music cues on it and little messages on screen telling you when something was going to be added in ADR. I'd really chanced my arm when they phoned up and said, Russell says you'd be a good person to do the Nestine voice. And I thought, well, the Nestine doesn't speak, but okay, fine.
You didn't let your principles of the classic series stand in your way there. No, sorry, Nestines don't speak. I can't do it.
No, and I said, oh, could you send me a tape of the episode? And I expected them to say, no, everything's locked up in a bunker. You can't come near it. And they just sent it to me. They did that for the first few years, actually. They used to send me the early edits. And like Dalek, for example, I had a lot of concerns about some of the sound of the Dalek we'd recorded on location. There were a lot of interference problems with the ring modulator. I sense you're snoring already.
Actually, I get excited when you mention ring modulators.
Well done. So you're the one, are you? So Joe Ahern, sensing that I was getting really... I try not to be too finicky about things. I think I was irritating him slightly. And I, you know, spoke to him a few times on the phone and said, look, I'm really worried. And he said, no, it all sounds brilliant. I said, I know there are some takes that you did not get a good take technically from the ring modulator. I know it, you know. And he said, all right, look, I'll send you the episode and you go through it and you tell me which lines you want to redo in ADR, which was so generous, really. So I got the episode, I watched it and loved it. Then I, you know, there were an enormous number of lines that I wanted to redo. So I was allowed to go and, you know, re-record those just to get the ring modulation right, really.
Before we close the interview, one question I've got to ask, but I quite understand if you don't want to answer it. There's a new series coming up, and we know that Stephen Moffat is using quite a lot of new people. A little bird tells me that somebody might be making a transition between one era and the other. Can you confirm this in any way?
What person?
Well, I don't know. Someone quite close to us now.
Well, who's close to you?
Via the means of electronic trickery.
You mean me?
Possibly.
Oh, right. You're being more cagey about it than me.
Well, you know.
All I can say is that, you know, one of the things about Doctor Who, when you work on it, you get given your sides for the day, which are the pages of scripts they're intending to shoot that day. And at the top, it says, everything you'll experience today is to be considered confidential. And it sort of threatens some disciplinary action or something. So, I mean, that's a fairly good indication that you're not supposed to talk about what happens. So with regard to that and the fact that some people have told me that there were some photographs of me on the internet and some people did a strange recording of Matt Smith talking to a Dalek, you know, I would say you must draw your own conclusions and I will say no more.
OK, John, quite a few things are going on in the world of Doctor Who at the moment. One of the most exciting things, is, and I'm afraid we're going to miss it, is the Bonham's auction, which is taking place while we're at Gallifrey.
First thing to say is Bonham. Are they well known? I've heard of Sotheby's. You know, Bonham, the only Bonham I know, is a drummer of Led Zepp. Is it, you know, did his family move into something else afterwards? Seems a bit extraordinary. Yeah, we are, but we're in LA, aren't we? We're at the convention when that's going on. But we will be doing some telephone bidding.
I've got my eye on quite a few items.
What took your eye? The actual kind of catalogue is astonishingly extensive, isn't it?
It's amazing. Incredible items. Once in a lifetime opportunity, really, to get your hands on some of this stuff. Colin Teague's sick note.
Yeah, that's highly prized, isn't it? And on a similar sort of vein, really, there's John Lumich's colostomy bag, which is full with all content still intact.
Life-size destroyed Cassandra. That's going for £5,000. That one.
Yeah, you can keep your model. Destroyed Cassandra's. This is a real thing. I mean, who wouldn't want that? You know, it's like, you know, next to the pinball machine in your, you know, in your midlife crisis room.
One of the most unusual lots is the car that featured the Runaway Bride. It's the one with the two kids sit in
where they're waving. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a Peugeot 405. Estimate £60,000.
Yeah, that's a bit tangential, isn't it? I mean, I like the idea of Camille Kudry's costume from Love and Monsters. £450. I look lovely in that.
Yeah, but if you spend an extra £1,000, you can have the same costume with the wine stain.
Is it a wine stain?
That's what it says on the certificate. I'm actually going to go for Noel Clark's T-shirt from The Girl in the Fireplace. It's £450. Or, alternatively, you can buy the same T-shirt for £12.99 from TK Maxx. Basically, you're paying £437 for Noel Clark's odour.
And it's a ripe, rich odour, that's for sure.
It's not all new series stuff. There's some really good classic stuff as well if you're an old school fan. You got your eye on anything, John?
Well, yeah, they say they've got one of Peter Pratt's eyeballs. And actually, I'm wondering, is that actually one of Peter Pratt's eyeballs or just one of the Master's kind of headpiece eyeballs? I mean, it'd be worth buying. It's only £50.
It's not clear, is it? I'm going to go for a rotten mandrel hoof. I'm going to use that as a nice doorstop. There's a nice hemivore head here, John.
What's a hemivore? A Davros epaulette?
I've got one of those.
And I've already got, sadly, the Silver Nemesis Sideman breathing apparatus.
And there's a God of Ragnarok for sale. I've already got four of those.
And the key to time.
Are you sure Andrew Beach knows about this?
Oh, there were quite a few keys to time.
Two of the most exciting lots, though, are, of course, the 10th Planet Episode 4 and Jessica Martin.
And if you successfully win Jessica Martin, she comes alongside, accompanied by a whole host of Mary Tam autographs.
Well, that sold me. I'm going for it now. Anyway, talking about flogging a dead horse, there's some news going on about John Barrowman. How about he's changed the words of a popular song from a musical to make it Doctor Who orientated? I mean, how sad is that?
I mean, is there no depth that he won't stoop to for a cheap laugh? I mean, God, John, get over it. You've got to move on. Badly singing as well, you know, singing these things badly. I mean, but he is brave. He's a brave singer, it's true.
In other news, we've had some more notes from Benjamin Cook. He's been giving us notes over the last few months about our output.
Yeah, how the hell does he... We keep changing our email address, but he still keeps sending us these emails with pieces of advice. I don't quite understand where he gets it from.
Yeah, but it's good advice. I mean, remember last time he told us to release the Christmas special in the Christmas week? I mean, that was invaluable advice.
Yes, I filter them. I filter Ben's messages into a folder marked Bleeding Obvious. So what's his latest message?
His latest one is, hi guys, just a suggestion from Ickle Old Me at 3:35 a.m. Why don't you make the podcast fast a bit more intense? It's just a thought, you know best. Love and hugs, Ben.
Have you replied to that yet?
No.
Does he never sleep? It's just like one big Red Bull fest that young lad is on.
Ow! Ooh. Ow! Are you all right, John?
Oh, it's just my arthritis playing up.
Ow! Oh, yeah, let me rub your back for you.
Ooh!
Listen, some of the exciting news are going around at the moment about Torchwood.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Ooh. They're going to America. Torchwood in America. Are you looking forward to it?
Oh, I know. That sounds an odd idea.
Ooh! Super ratings. Coast to coast. Easy to get. Crap on air.
Ow!
In a transcontinental. Downturn. Just sell an old idea. What's the big deal?
But there's no masturbation.
That's too far.
But somewhere on the way,
you might work with Terry Garr.
Ow!
Torchwood in America.
Ooh! Ow! I don't lie. Fox TV station.
Torchwood in America.
Ooh! Camp Sci-Fi. Across the nation.
Torchwood in America.
Got to have a big invasion. Rubber bass.
So, what do you think we can expect from this new American version of Torchwood, John?
Ooh, anything in the kitchen sink.
Same tact. Jack's back. Many hours of real trash. It's not HBO. To keep on running true, some things will have to go.
Ooh, there's no orgasms, no date rape, and no felching, or an alien hope.
They may have to walk a fine line, but everybody's working overtime. Torchwood in America.
Ow! I don't lie. Fox TV station.
Torchwood in America.
Brand to brand, across the nation.
Ooh! Torchwood in America.
Got to have a big invasion.
Jack lives in America.
Ooh, down a bit. Ooh! Ow!
Jack lives in America.
Wait a minute! Ow!
No, you know what? I think it's a stupid idea. Okay, John, well, it's a sad, sad day. I suppose we ought to come clean about what's happening.
Yes, that's right. It's the very last Tachyon TV podcast to be produced under the old team.
Yeah, that's right, John. We had hoped to carry on under the new production team, and we had all sorts of new and exciting features lined up. For example, a new regular feature called It's Me, Tony Lee. Yeah, we had all sorts lined up, but in the end, they decided to go in a completely new direction.
And the next Tachyon TV podcast will be hosted by Conan O'Brien and Barbara Windsor.
Well, they've got not much else on at the minute, have they?
That's true. They were. Obviously, it's good for them, but it's really the end of an era.
Hello, I'm Rula Lenska. You probably remember me from my internationally famous commercials for Alberto VO5 hairspray. Or, in the UK, as the star of Rock Follies, who in later years went on to make George Galloway look like a massive twat. Sadly, Rula has just received some very bad news. Despite minutes of hard work and dedication on my part, I have been cast aside by Tachyon TV's new production team for younger blood. And while I wish Michaela Strachan every success as my replacement, I just wish they'd told me before I splashed out on a new set of hair extensions. And that bronze statue of Dennis Waterman that's just been commissioned to stand at the front of my moat. I'll almost certainly lose the deposit now, you know. That's right. Rula needs your help. So, please, give what you can afford. Whether it be a regular slot on Potchock or Radio Free Scaro or 19 seconds a week on The 2 Minute Time Lord, I'll do practically anything. I'll even dress up as a giant wasp if that helps. Bar mitzvahs are my speciality, and I have Stephanie Beecham's phone number as well. So don't delay. Give Rula a job today. Please send your offers and PayPal information to me, Rula Lenska, The Ramblings, Blakiston Crescent, Tunbridge Wells, Kent, TN48QT. Thank you so much.
Oh, isn't that sweet? Well, just before we all descend into tears, we've just got enough time for the papers. I've got the NME here. That leads with Papa's Got a Brand New Lawsuit. That is, of course, the news that James Brown is suing Tachyon TV.
I've got Variety here. The headline is, Tennant is not your next Hugh Laurie. More fallout from David Tennant's failed pilot.
Yeah, in The Sun, we've got Little Mrs. Moffat. And that's more fallout from Sid Little's revelation of his 3-year affair with Stephen Moffat.
In UK Wired, we've got Downcast on Podcast. Rob Sherman frankly discusses his addiction to podcast interviews.
And finally, the Daily Mail. That's Karen Gillan's new weekly column, Pond Life. And that starts off with some exclusive tips about miniskirts, truncheons and helmets. Coming soon from Tachyon TV.
Hang on, is that it?
Yeah, that's it. I'm afraid we've got to go now. Conan O'Brien is just over there waiting to come on.
But I don't want to go.
Come on, mate. We've had a good innings.
But there's still so much more we could do. Another interview with Rob Shearman, perhaps.
That's nice.
Or more Toby Hayden. He's good.
And sometimes, actually, actors don't get credited at all, which you'd think this day and age would be awful. Navin Chowdhury doesn't get credited for World War III. I noticed this in the time I could have been kissing a lady.
I could take singing lessons.
It's far too late for that, mate.
But what about our reward?
Reward? What do you mean, reward? We do this out of the goodness of our hearts. There's no reward. It's not very noble.
That. I had to watch Ghostlight and you watched The Stolen Earth 26 times in a single weekend. We deserve something for that, surely.
You're so right. Give me that phone.
Hello?
Hello, Damon, is that you?
You'll have to speak up a bit. I'm in a nightclub.
A nightclub? It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, mate.
I'm in Scotland.
Oh, yes, of course. Sorry, I forgot. Listen, mate, I know you've gone through a lot for Tacky on TV in the past. You know, the lawsuit from Tracy Van Oberman.
You're going to have to speak up a bit. I'm being pestered by what looks like Gordon Strachan in a dress.
Yeah, sorry, mate, that might be down to me. The agency said she'd be a looker.
Get off! Go away! Stop it!
Listen, mate, I just wanted to say thanks. Thanks, enjoy your reward.
Look, chewing someone's ear off isn't considered foreplay. Not even up here! Get down! Stop it!
Damon, are you there? Are you there? Oh, I think we lost Damon. I think that went well, though. Tell you what, John. Why don't you give John Paul a ring on this Tachyon telephone I've never mentioned before? If you ring him in 2005, he's just about to appear on Doctor Who. He hasn't technically met you, so he won't recognise you. You could give him some advice.
Okay.
Hello?
Hi, you don't know me.
Is that John Williams?
Hello, you don't know me, but I have called to give you some important advice.
I'm really sorry. I don't need any double glazing, thanks. How did you get this number?
Don't worry about that. Listen, in a few months' time, you'll be given a fantastic opportunity.
Don't tell me. Have I been selected to win a lifetime subscription to Reader's Digest? Look, I'm not interested.
Look, just shut the fuck up and listen, will you? Just take this advice. Whatever you do, don't blink. Just don't blink. It'll ruin the close-up. Trust me, just don't blink.
Are you sure that isn't John Williams?
I think I got away with it. This is all very well and good, but I don't see how this is actually helping me. Where's my reward?
Here you are, mate. I got you this.
A destroyed Cassandra. Wow. Thanks.
It's the least I could do, mate. Besides, I couldn't afford the life-size one from Bonhams.
So that's it, then. This is really the end?
Yep. I think we've probably dragged this out for as long as we can.
Just a tiny bit longer?
Oh, go on, then.
Thank you.